Golden Arrow Resources, a junior mining powerhouse with strong management, cash rich, and high quality properties with precious metals, gold, silver, and recently added copper for its demand and price rise. Golden Arrow has a proven five-step development strategy, previously responsible for three major discoveries with two in production. Golden Arrow Resources, U.S. trading symbol GARWF, and in Canada, GRG. Web address, goldenarrowresources.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. Evan is my guide into Latin American politics as we are experiencing in the challenge to democracy worldwide. You see the same thing in Latin America accelerating. And there are a number of presidential contests, but right now we're dealing with what looks to be not only a presidential contest, not only a challenge to the Constitution, rewriting the Constitution, but also a protest by indigenous people. I meet for the first time the Mapuche of the southern part of Latin America. This is Chile, across the Andes into Argentina. I read from a report about the upset in Chile most recently. According to a police report, six hooded individuals carrying weapons took over the Santa Lydia farm in the Araucaria region, intimidated farmhands, and set on fire buildings. That same day, Chilean President Sebastian Piñera declared a state of emergency and militarized four provinces in this region that was under threat by, they're called the indigenous Mapuche rebels or rebellion. They've protested before, but this state of emergency is to deal with what are understood as increasing attacks by the original Mapuche tribes. These are indigenous people. I need to understand how long-standing this is, but right now we have a 15-day exceptional state of emergency. Professor, if I understand correctly, this is in addition to the upset that happened in 2019. Perhaps it's an extension of the same thing. I remember buses being set on fire in Santiago, and that was the predicate for, I believe, the decision to rewrite or reacquaint or reorient the Constitution, which is underway. So who are the Mapuche, and are they part of the protests in the capital city and part of the Constitution rewriting?
It's a great question, John, and there's a rough interlinkage. Broadly, starting in October 2019, you had a swelling of frustration over perceived inequalities in government performance, a lot of really kind of middle class type of concerns in Chile that led to the rewriting, or at least in a commitment to rewrite Chile's constitution, a process that's going on right now. Separate from that, what you have, though, is that in most of Latin America, the indigenous groups who were there before the Spanish or the Portuguese or others arrived, in most places they were conquered, later assimilated into the economy, sometimes assimilated through intermarriage, or, you know, sadly, died off from the diseases that the Spanish and others brought. One of the exceptions to that is in the very southern tip of South America. So if you look at the geography of Chile, you have this little strip of land, that extends a long way with the mountains to the east. So a relatively inaccessible strip, especially from Europe because it's Pacific facing. But within that region, the Mapuche Indians were there. The conqueror Pedro de Valdivia came, but never fully conquered the land as he pushed down to Santiago. And indeed, that southern part of that strip of land, which today is Chile, the Mapuche basically resisted attempts to settle and establish outposts there for more than 350 years. It was only actually in 1882 when Chile, the Chilean government finally occupied the territory that's today known as Araucanía. That in combination with disease kind of led to the final submission or integration of the Mapuche. But like if you think about the Apache Indians, for example, in the United States, the Mapuche were used to living free off of the land. And so the settling of the land, you know, today by loggers and other agricultural interests, the dispute has been that a people who saw themselves as more, who never fully subjugated, continue to say today that the commitments to their land are violated by the government, and it should be their land and not the land of the settlers. And so, especially this past decade, there have been something called the Mayeco coordinating, the Arauco Mayeco coordinating organ, a series of terrorist attacks, usually against loggers and logging trucks and landowners. When the Pope visited in 2015, there was an attempt to burn three government helicopters in protest. So it's been a longstanding problem that continues to flare up. Now, the irony is that among the many issues that are at stake in the assembly that we talked about, A Mapuche woman scholar was actually selected along with 17 other Mapuche representatives to be part of the rewriting of the Chilean constitution. So the idea of recognizing Mapuche rights and turning Chile into a plural national state is part of, but it's only one part of the was represented by the assembly. But yeah, the violence that goes on in Araucanía and the Biobío regions, and as you point out also, that's begun to spill over actually into Argentina to the east, where the Argentine government of a very different political persuasion has also begun talking about insecurity on the roads because of Mapuche protests.
And these protests, do they rock Piñera, the Sebastián Piñera, that he would move so swiftly to declare a state of emergency? This, compared to what we were talking about with Ecuador, for example, where you have a demonstrable narco-terrorism, transnational narco-terrorism, this, from your presentation, this sounds like a long-standing dispute dating back to the colonial days.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, in Ecuador, the problem that you have, not unlike in Central America, is, again, well-armed, well-resourced narco-traffickers presenting a serious challenge to the police. In Chile, it's more about space. It's almost like, the U.S. in the West and in reservations. In a relatively remote extended area, you basically have a small number of radical indigenous who are committing terrorist acts. This is something that the militarized police, the Carabineros, have not been fully capable of keeping under control. And so in this case, declaring the state of emergency is designed to give the state more powers to basically bring down the violence. And so part of the problem in the Chilean case is that, among other terrorist acts, they've been going after truckers, hijacking their trucks, burning their trucks to basically show that they're there. And so, again, to be able to control the highways and go after the people, it's really about needing more authorities and more capabilities than it is really the level of violence in this case.
An additional concern that I've read about, and I've had these conversations with a colleague of mine, Joseph Umar of the Secure Free Society, you know him very well. The question here is indigenous people protesting the central government. That is similar to what we saw in Colombia during the worst of the pandemic, the protests in large cities led by indigenous people. It is similar, for example, to some of the upset during the recent Peruvian campaign, where indigenous people are people who are marginalized because they live in poor agricultural sections of a otherwise prosperous land of natural resources, lead the protest towards the central government. Is it coincidence that these things happen, Professor? I'm not looking for trouble here. I'm just trying to connect this to the general persuasion throughout the continent for populism and for strong men to emerge as representing the least among us, and then taking control of the center and changing the constitution and staying in power, the Chavez model.
It's a great question, John. The fraction that the indigenous represent as part of the population and the role in it varies widely across Latin America, but you're right. Traditionally, the indigenous tend to be one of the groups which are economically marginalized, which oftentimes don't receive the resources. So in the case of Chile, again, you have a remote region where you have sparsely settled and an indigenous group that was never fully conquered and integrated, so to speak. A small fraction of them can continues with these terrorist acts. So in Chile, the indigenous are only a small portion of the social movement. If you look at a place like Peru, where the country, or Bolivia, where the country is substantially of indigenous population, whether Quechua, Aymara, or various other different groups, you see, for example, the role in Bolivia that the indigenous majority played in the populism that brought Evo Morales to power. In Ecuador, you see the role of the indigenous in the internal regions in protesting against Chinese and in other, you know, mining activity, indigenous powerful political groups like CONAI. In Colombia, the indigenous have been a somewhat smaller portion and have played a smaller political role. But the interesting thing in Colombia was that you had just really a whole tapestry of different groups that came together in some of those nationwide protests. But one of the issues in Colombia specifically with the protests that were associated with fiscal reform is that while people came out into the street over frustration of conditions and frustration of government performance, you also had the ELN in places like Cali and Medellin and others, in addition to the indigenous, in addition to other ideological left groups. And the concern was in Colombia that certain bad apples basically had weaponized those protests, had provoked violence, in an attempt to destabilize the government. So there's one thread, but the role is a little bit different, I'd say, in each part of the region.
I'm speaking to Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College, Strategic Studies Institute. He's a Latin American research professor. The professor mentions Peru. We're going there because there's a new president in Peru, Pedro Castillo, a colorful man who surprisingly is staying back from the media and rallying only his base. Why? What's happened? This was a very close election, and Pedro Castillo was looked to be a change of the page, a turn of the page, a change of the chapter for Peru. However, this is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.